Hi there, Brenna here from Context Travel. Welcome again to In Context, a series of conversations with our scholars all over the world who are helping us to put their cultural capitals into context. We are taking a slightly different approach for this episode, and we're bringing you a real-time update from the current situation in Italy. I sat down yesterday to chat with Megan Todd, our program director for Italy, Greece, and Turkey, and longtime Roman resident, to get her take on what it's been like this week living with the coronavirus quarantine in an effort to better understand what seems to be a future state that we're all heading towards. So, Megan, maybe let's just start kind of generally. You know, we've been obviously talking about this in the office a ton over the last few days, but for people who don't have a direct line to someone in Rome, maybe just give us a quick rundown of what's going on, what some of the rules are that you guys are all navigating, and just generally what it's felt like living in Italy in the last few days.
Yeah, well, I think that probably the primary thing that all of us are dealing with is just how rapidly everything is changing. So as each one of these new presidential decrees has come out, we've said, okay, all right, fine, we'll adapt to this restriction and now this restriction and now this one. So it's really hard to actually know what to do because it seems like we wake up every morning to a new set of rules. So the latest set of rules is that we really can't go out of the house except if it's for medical reasons or for gathering essential provisions, so groceries, medical supplies, toilet paper, those kinds of things. There's been this very contentious, and it's all over Facebook right now, about whether we can go out to the park to jog or not. And this is, there's interpretations of this law, and it's very funny actually how it's being like micro kind of distilled down to these very small points, like, can I go to the park to take a walk? You can if you have a dog, and it's unclear if you can without a dog. So then people are saying, oh, we should get dogs, but we can't go in our cars to drive places, so we can't go to the dog pound to adopt a dog, so that's out of the question. You can't go outside of your zip code. You can't go to, unless you're visiting your grandma who is sick and you have special permission. They've issued, there's actually a form to fill out where you have to state your business and where you're going, and you could be asked to show it at a checkpoint either by the police or the military. So there's a very strange quality about all this, and we keep finding like historical overlap with what it must have been like to live in Italy during World War II. But then people didn't have freedom of movement because they were afraid of, you know, being bombed or what was happening. But you know, then at the beginning, it all felt really medieval, like they pulled up the drawbridge and our little walled city, we can't go out, we can't go anywhere. So there are a lot of interesting historical connections to what's going on, but basically we have to stay inside and that's what we're allowed to do.
And is everyone, are most people just working from home like we are? Has that been the shift?
Yeah, and I think that most people are working from home. The way the law is written is it's encouraging employers that anyone who can should work from home, except for obviously people who work in the health field and anyone who has anyone who's part of the supply chain in the production sense. So people who work in factories need to go to work. Strangely, people who work in mechanic shops need to go to work. People who work in any kind of industry, if you drive a truck that brings milk to the grocery stores, you have to go to work. And then each company can also decide that someone is an essential worker and they need to come to the office. And so that's happening, but you also have to have a special piece of paper, a form that's issued by the government saying that you have permission to be going to your workplace and you might be asked to show it on your way commuting, which is also a bit strange. But for the most part, people are working from home, but it's not something that Italians do normally. So there's a lot less of a culture of remote working here than there is in the US, certainly.
So is anything open, Megan? Like, are bars and restaurants still open? Does it feel like the whole city's kind of shut down?
Well, I can't speak from firsthand experience because I haven't been outside in a few days. So I don't know. But what the decree that was issued today says that only essential businesses can be open. So I think it distills down to newsstands, tobacco shops, grocery stores. Markets can be open as long as they're the closed markets, but open markets can't be open. They took away so like you can't buy clothing or you couldn't go buy a pair of shoes. You can't go to the hairdresser. You can't go to get a massage or get your nails done. Those things are all closed. Gyms, pools, any of that kind of stuff. Anywhere where people gather, all of those things were closed. Bars and restaurants were open until yesterday, but I think today they are not open. But again, it's a long list of things. And there's yesterday they could be open until 6. And I think today they're shut completely.
Wow. I didn't realize that it was changing like every day.
Yeah. I mean, I think things, it started, I think the very first moment of all this was the Sunday morning, February 23rd, when they announced that no school trips could go anywhere, because this was, it was coming up to the period of time when Italian kids all go on school trips around the country or even out of the country. And that was sort of like a first wake up, like, huh, something is coming and some restrictions are going to be in place. And then from there, it's just been kind of a slow roll. And first it really only applied to Lombardy and Veneto. So those of us living in Rome or in other cities thought, yeah, this doesn't apply to me. This is not for me. This is, again, that's that medieval. They pulled up their drawbridge, but doesn't matter. I don't need to go to Milan right now anyway. But then slowly with the latest, then on March 8th, they closed all the museums. And so obviously that had an impact on anyone working in tourism or any tourists who found themselves here. But then March 9th, it was like everybody at home, everything is done. And then March 11th, this new range of all the businesses that are closed. What we don't know is whether they'll respect the end dates on all of these decrees, or we might be waiting for new news about these things being extended, but nobody knows the answer to that just yet.
Are there end dates appended to them right now? What is that?
April 3rd is when the school closure should end, and April 3rd is when the museum closure should end. And then the businesses, the one that was just released yesterday, I believe it was March 25th, any of the non-essential businesses that were closed today need to stay closed for 2 weeks, so until March 25th. And then they'll talk about reopening those businesses.
Wow. Yeah, we'll be at home for a month, I guess.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's been some great, I mean, so Italy now has their public health department has a hashtag that says Io resto a casa, meaning I stay home. And it's trying, they're really trying hard to encourage people to actually abide by all these restrictions, which, as you can imagine, Italians as a culture, very social, very connected to family. So saying to someone that you can't go out, also there's some rule abiding issues, I would say, with Italians as a culture. They're not really so keen on being told what they can and can't do. So the reason these things have gotten so severe is that people in Lombardy and Veneto were not respecting the initial kind of public health warnings, like please stay home. Now it's you must stay home. And they had to extend it to the whole country because of the sort of historical migration patterns in Italy, where so many people who live in Lombardy are people who originate from towns and cities in the south. People were going back and forth to stay connected to their families and just bringing the virus up and down the peninsula because of their cities of origin or where their grandma lives or where their girlfriend is. And in fact, when the first kind of wave of restrictions was in place, people just went in droves to the train station and headed to Sicily or headed to Puglia, where those places all had to absorb all these people coming from infected areas in the north, which is why we had to have this national ban. And of course, on the eve of the national ban, a lot of people escaped from big cities to their summer houses in small communities along the Tuscan coast, especially, where all those communities are now saying, well, why are you guys here? We were fine. And now you've brought your red zone contagion to us. So that's why they made the ban saying that you have to be a resident of the place where you find yourself. Otherwise, you have to go home to where you are. So you can't actually decamp to your beach house if it's not your primary residence.
Wow. Yeah. Have you seen some of, we've been noticing here, and we're like, you're right, we're probably like a phase or two earlier than what you guys are. But we've been noticing like some like grocery store shelves are pretty empty, like the sort of dry goods section of stores are pretty picked over. Have you seen the same kind of like prepper?
Yes. Well, I have to disclaim one thing first, that in my own personal life, the way that my husband and I have divided our responsibilities in the marriage, I don't grocery shop, he does. So I haven't seen it firsthand. But what I am told is that the day after the school trips were closed, so that was February 25th, strangely, that Monday morning, the supermarkets were packed. So I think other people started to think, something is going to kick off here. Let me go get ready. And huge lines. And the pasta aisle was the first to be decimated. And there are a lot of jokes online and memes floating around about which pasta shapes were left on the shelves. And so I think it was the whole wheat bow ties were the ones that nobody wanted. And the what are called penne lisce. So like the penne that don't have the little lines in them. Apparently Italians don't like those either. So those were left on the shelves and not bought. But yeah, what I'm told is that they are keeping up with supply and demand. So the grocery stores are restocking. A lot of grocery stores in Italy now had already moved into a 24-hour cycle. So they're getting deliveries at night and being ready for the next day. I haven't heard of any scarcity yet. But again, it's early days. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Have you, and when the first closure came on the 23rd, you said, had you guys heard anything before then? Or was that sort of like, did you have any sense that it was coming, or that this was sort of like a mounting crisis? Or was it just like you woke up one day and this sort of happened?
No, we just woke up. I mean, I think I would imagine that for Americans, it's the same. It was like this faraway problem in China. This has nothing to do with me. I'm not planning to go to China. I don't know anybody who's been to China. So that's happening over there. And really sorry that it is, but it doesn't touch me. And then it was the Friday before the school trip closure that they announced the first case in this small town in northern Italy called Codogno. So there was somebody. But the mystery was he wasn't patient zero. So that sort of opened this big mystery of like, well, who is patient zero and will we ever know who patient zero is? And then from there, it went from, you know, in the usual way that this thing seems to grow exponentially, there was this one case became five cases, became 40 cases, became 100 cases, really over the weekend, which is what caused them to stop the school trip travel on the Sunday morning. And then Monday, it was already, you know, doubling and doubling and doubling every day for the rest of the week. And they immediately shut down Milan and Venice in particular, but those regions, things were sort of shuttered quickly. But again, it was like, okay, I'm in Rome, that's happening up there. It's really unfortunate for those people, but this doesn't touch me. But now now we get it. Like, we're all in this together. And from a public health point of view, we all have to be. I would even say this is applicable to everyone in the world right now. You really do need to put aside your own sort of personal needs or personal desires at the moment and try to do what's best for the collective whole. And so from a public health perspective, the only way to do that is for everybody just to stay home and try to stop the spread of this thing so it doesn't get, and the reason to stop it spreading is so that it doesn't overtax the health system, which is unfortunately at this point in Italy already kind of at maximum capacity, which is what we're trying to avoid it getting any worse.
Yeah, have you guys, I mean, everything that we're reading in the States, our news cycle has really been dominated by, of course, the virus, but more specifically, like a lack of test kits and how, and the tax on the system and like how overwhelmed many hospitals would be if this, like if it really grows here, et cetera, et cetera. Is that actually, are you actually, like, is that actually happening in Italy? Is that what you guys are actually seeing?
Yeah. And it is. And like I said, I'm not personally touched by it. You know, my Italian relatives are healthy. Nobody's there. There are some elderly people in my family, but they're not needing medical care at the moment. But I think what people are worried about is not, will I get coronavirus and need to be hospitalized, but like, what if I have a car accident, or what if I have a tumor? Like, will anybody be able to take care of me? And I think at the moment they probably won't. I think one of the things, I think it's been publicized in the US media by now, but doctors are now working from a protocol of who gets to be treated. And it's very standard in any kind of a, you know, sort of public health planning emergency situation, but it will come. They'll have to make some hard choices about who gets the ventilator and who doesn't, because there aren't enough to go around. And I think that is something that America would be wise to start doing some thinking about allocation of resources and how you pick who gets the intensive care bed and who doesn't.
Yeah. You've lived in Italy a long time now, Megan. Is this the first time that you've seen anything like this happen?
Yeah, I would say this. I mean, I've lived a lot of places. I lived in Asia for a long time, and in some random faraway places like East Timor. And this is the first time I've ever lived through a quarantine of any kind. And it is very strange. It does feel like sort of brand new territory and a weird mixture of, a public health crisis. Feels like post 9/11 a little bit in some way of, there is some solidarity building amongst people, even though we can't actually go see each other, that we're all suffering together through this situation. But no, I've never seen anything like this in Italy, nor would I have expected Italy to react as positively as they have. I think it, there are initial missteps which might have caused this to get bigger faster than it might have somewhere else, but they're really, really, really allocating resources, trying to come up with ways to relieve financial burden on people. I think in certain categories of workers won't have to pay mortgages for a period of time as a result of this. They're trying to come up with financial aid packages for workers, for businesses. So I think they really are trying and they really are acknowledging. And the mantra from the government has been truth and transparency, which I think has made things much better than it would have been if they'd tried to kind of brush this under the rug. Or I think, the fear is always that people will panic. But instead, I think they've had a very measured response and have been very clear about why we're doing what we're doing or why we're being asked to do what we're doing.
That's good, at least. Better to have the
right. You'd sort of expect chaos, right? But it actually hasn't been chaotic. I mean, I think with the exception of a few grocery store, but I think we are hearing that from every country, this weird fixation with making sure you have enough toilet paper. But so that has happened here too. But there isn't like widespread panic or chaos. I think there's probably a little less adhesion to the mandates than there might be in some other countries, but which is why they've had to kind of double down on putting everybody on in quarantine. But I think overall, I'm impressed personally.
Yeah. And have you seen? It's been kind of weird the last couple of days, at least for me, because the way that we work at Context, we're always kind of remote anyways. So it almost doesn't even feel like, for us, it doesn't feel like work-wise things are that much different, really. Yeah. But I don't know, have you noticed or have you heard from friends or family or anything? Like, are there behaviors that have changed since the regulations have come in? Like, are people connecting more online? Are they, like, are they compensating?
Yeah, well, I would say I think the group of people who are most impacted by this are teenagers, and I have two of those in my house, and so I can see firsthand. There's a class of people who need to be with other people all the time and are highly driven to find opportunities to socialize. And so, in fact, this morning I did go out for a brief jog in the park, which I thought at the time was legal, and now I'm not sure, but I did it anyway. And I came home and my 18-year-old daughter had actually left, and she knew she wasn't supposed to, but met a friend at the park. They did like a 30-minute walk and then came back, that need to see each other. So they shouldn't have done it, but I think that people are kind of driven to these things. But so teenagers are adopting new habits. They've got to socialize, FaceTime, WhatsApp, chat. They're playing Cards Against Humanity on Zoom as a group. Like, they have to find different and creative ways. And the funny part was the first day that all the regulations came down, one of my daughters said that, this was my fault and that I was the one ruining her life because I was asking her to follow the rules. And so it actually was a good sort of parenting moment to be able to sit down and say, no, we're doing this for the collective good. We're not sick, but other people will be. And this is how we stop the spread. And you can't go to your friend's house. Just end of story. So I think the teenagers are the ones who are impacted more. And I think those are the ones who are being stopped on the street if they're out and asked to see their identity documents. And are they in the right zip code? And are they going to the grocery store? And so I think that's probably the biggest thing. But I do know that some of the grandmas are having to learn how to use social media in a way that they haven't before. And so there is a lot of campaigns around about teach your nonna how to do FaceTime, you know, so that you can keep talking to her. So
That would be hard as a teenager.
Right? I know.
Yeah.
It's brutal. And trying to do school, which is an inherently interactive activity, on video is hard. It's very, very difficult for the teachers who haven't had to work that way, and not for the kids who are doing it. But you're right, like, I'm on Zoom all, you know, most of every day anyway, but I think for people who are used to, hanging out, it's a little bit different. Yeah.
Our class is all now online. School's still happening. It's just all virtual.
It is. And, so I think that it's taking different forms in different places. But so, for example, all the U.S. study abroad programs, of which there are very many, especially in Florence and in Rome, they were among the first to kind of shut down and send kids home. So all of those classes are still happening, but remote and across the time zone. So I think those are even more challenging. And especially because most of those study abroad programs, students are coming to learn on site and go to see these works of art or works of architecture in person. So it's been really hard. A lot of our guides in Rome and in Florence are teachers and are trying to figure out how to adapt now to these new restrictions. They can't even go out and video that piazza to show to the class because now they have to stay home. And for high school kids, I think it's different. The Italian high schools have very limited technology at their disposal. So I'm not even sure what's happening in the public schools. My kids go to a private school that is a little more equipped, but even they are stressed. Some of the teachers just have no idea even how to turn on Zoom, let alone run a discussion about, physics over it. So, but they're learning quickly. I'd say everybody is having to adapt quickly to this new reality, especially because it should end on April 3rd, but nobody really knows if it'll go beyond that or not.
Oh, yeah. I actually, study abroad is something that had not even crossed my mind, but God, you're right. It's so, there's perhaps no other thing that is quite as location-based, right? Like you go to Rome because you want to study Caravaggio or Bernini or, you know, to like actually interact with the things there on the ground. That's so hard to replace.
Yeah. We had two interns in our office this semester from two different American universities. And one of them, her parents wanted her to come back right away. So as soon as anything got a little bit dicey, like in that first kind of February 25th week, her parents recalled her to the US. And the other one really wanted to stay. And even her home institution was fine with her staying. She was the last one of six roommates who was still here until last week. And then on Monday, even her home institution said, look, we really can't have you there anymore with all of these new restrictions. And if flights are suspended, which surprise, surprise, now they are, she had to leave. And it's good that she did when she did. But I think that's probably the strangest thing that's happening right now, especially for expats like me, is this idea that now I've never been told I can't go on a plane and go somewhere or get on a plane and go home to where my family is, my parents and my sister. So it's a very strange feeling that I would not even if I wanted to, I couldn't go buy a ticket and fly to the US right now. But it is interesting how, and also trying to understand the sort of geopolitics of the whole thing, like who's closing, why did the UK, why can they still fly to the US, but we can't, you know?
Truly. Yeah. I mean, the pace of change in the last week, which, you know, you mentioned it right at the start of our conversation, but it has felt like every morning we kind of collectively are waking up to these headlines and it's suddenly a slightly different world than it was yesterday.
It's weird. I keep going back to like childhood memories of anybody who grew up in the Northeast in the 70s might remember the blizzard of 78. So school was closed for 3 weeks for the blizzard of 78. We couldn't go out. And then there started to be supply chain problems too with grocery stores and all the rest because no one could drive anywhere. But it was fun. Like we were on lockdown, but the weather was causing it but we could still go out and go sledding. And it was sort of this completely different feeling, even though it wasn't our choice. And we were all really sick of it by the time it ended. But you just had to wait for the snow to melt. Like it was literally, it took as long as it was going to take. But otherwise, it is so strange. And there's no end date. Like it's just this rolling situation. And it does, it just keeps changing. It might change here, and then tomorrow it might be changing radically in the next country or the next community. And there's no predicting what's going to come or what's going to happen.
Yeah, when or where.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, you mentioned earlier that there's kind of a feeling of, you know, that this might be similar to what it was like living in Italy during World War II. And even hearing some of the language, you know, like if you're out and you're caught, you have to show your papers. Even kind of hearing that language feels very strange. But do you know if you are out and caught and you're not supposed to be out, or you don't have, you know, the right clearance, do you know what happens? Do you get fined?
Well, not only do you get fined, but you actually, it's a very, the word in Italian is you get denounced, you get a denuncia. And this could actually go on your record. Like this could become an offense that you have to carry with you. It's not just a fine, like a parking ticket. It's actually, you are breaking a civil ordinance and so you can't do it, which is why we're all trying to figure out this, can we go jogging situation? Because it's clearly not worth having a criminal record over a little bit of exercise, but boy, does it help to be able to get out of the house even for 30 minutes and go to the park and sort of put this all aside for a second. And apparently the fine, I think you do have to pay a fine, but it goes on your record. So it's like 206 euros, I've heard, is the number. But again, a lot of this is kind of WhatsApp group chat noise that I don't know if it's all true or if it's just rumor at this point. But
So Megan, before I let you go, are there any other just general reflections you've had or things that have struck you as you've lived through this very singular and very, very strange week in Rome?
No, I mean, I think that, like, so there's like a little teeny weeny little silver lining to all this, which is that, I mean, for me personally, it's, I haven't spent this much time with my entire family united in a really long time. And there are some positives to it, right? Like we are also all going through this experience together. And so while each of us is having a slightly different version of it, whether it's because of school or work or whatever the different fields that we're in, it's something we will never forget this as a family, that's for sure. We're trying to figure it out all together. None of us more information than the other. So sometimes it's the kids coming to the dinner table saying, oh, I heard from so-and-so that this is happening over there, or, you know, they have their intel and then we have ours. And I'm talking to people at work all the time from the US and hearing about what's happening in France or Spain or UK or anywhere else. So it's interesting, but it's constantly evolving. And that's maybe what is the most stressful part about it, I think, for everyone, is not knowing what we'll wake up to tomorrow.
Yeah, that's understandable. I mean, I think in any situation like this, you know, the rumors and the uncertainty of all of it are almost often worse than even the situation itself and the reality of living through it.
I was talking to my team today and saying that alone is a stressor. And so feeling stressed is okay. And it's not that there's nothing to... The fact that you have the disease or don't have the disease or you're going to get it or not get it is like, that's stressful. But even just the not knowing what tomorrow is sort of going to be like for you in terms of your daily routine is stressful. All of this is disruptive and stressful. And I think at the beginning there was a lot of this, like, well, what's the big deal? It's just the flu. Why doesn't everybody just get over this? It's just the flu. But I think it's hope that message is starting to change a little bit and people are acknowledging that regardless of whether you get it or don't, it is a stressful thing that we're going through collectively and we should just try to support each other through it as best we can.
We'll sign off with that and we wish you all health and kindness, as to borrow Megan's closing words. We do our best to support each other through these difficult times. We'll talk to you soon.